You are now joining Children of the Watch.
That's right. It's the number one podcast in the galaxy for all things Star Wars television. I'm your host, Alex Maxwell, and joining me for this epic return is
Mac Lacey. Alex, it is so good to be back. We have both taken a little time off just to take care of some major, you know, life events and stuff like that. But we are back and we are changing gears. We are putting Kenobi in the rearview mirror, full speed Kenobi ahead to Andor.
Hello, Cassian. Yeah, little known fact, podcasters have real lives outside of podcasting, and so
we don't just exist when you are hearing us.
But that would be kind of cool though. We had major life change happen. I have a newborn baby that is 5 weeks old now, and she's awesome, but she hates sleeping, so that's awesome. So
and that's then why I have
go ahead.
I was just gonna say I have moved across the country. So
literally
we had a little bit going on, but we're back and I'm excited. This is gonna be a nice little kind of escape for me. It's returning to familiar territory, talking about something we love, but then it'll be a nice kind of check out of the day-to-day for me. So I'm excited to talk Andor.
Yeah, and you know, I wanted to talk about this trailer. The latest trailer is that's really what we're going to talk about. I mean, we're going to talk about everything Andor, all the hype surrounding it, the fact that it's now coming out September 21st with 3 episodes instead. We'll dive into that a little bit deeper, but I wanted to do this a little earlier, but of course, Mac moved. I have a child. Things happen. But we're glad that you guys are joining us now. And if you are joining us for the very first time, we are a scene-by-scene breakdown podcast. And we started as the Mandalorian Watch for the Mandalorian, and we transitioned into Children of the Watch, a Star Wars show, to talk all things Star Wars television. You can go back and find our coverage for the Book of Boba Fett and Obi-Wan Kenobi. And of course, we'll be here for the Mandalorian season 3, which is coming in February.
Oh, yeah.
So that's going to be super exciting. But we're here to talk about Andor and all the hype surrounding it. In fact, they're re-releasing Rogue One in select IMAX theaters on August 26th to hype up Andor. Have you checked to see if there's any tickets around you? There's none around me.
I haven't. I think I might have better luck than you just with the area I'm in now. But that falls right between my birthday and Michaela's birthday. So maybe I can talk her into Rogue One is her favorite Star Wars movie.
That's good.
So maybe I can talk her into doing that. But that would be sick.
That would be sick. So yeah, we never really even got to talk about the fact that, you know, they were doing a 2-episode premiere for this, which I think is really wise and probably what they're going to keep doing as they go forward. I don't know if you actually need to do it with The Mandalorian or not.
Now that we're already... It's established. And also just 8 episodes...
It's different.
...is different than 12.
12 is quite a bit. So I like the fact... I know we have to wait a little bit longer, but I like the fact that they're pushing it back. Solely, I mean, honestly, for personal reasons, to get in a better schedule with a newborn baby and stuff.
Yeah, as the older she gets and the further I get into unpacking my new house and everything, the better.
The better.
So I think just for us, selfishly, it worked out.
Thank you, Lucasfilm. We put a request in and it's our fault. So
change.org petitioned.
we did. But they're doing 3 episodes all on that first day. And wow.
How do we handle that?
I think it's just going to be one mega episode for that one. I think we have to go that route. But I'm super excited about that. I think, you know, it's going to be like watching like a little movie that day, you know?
For sure. I wonder what the runtime of each of these 12 episodes are going to be. I would imagine because there's 12, they were going to be a little shorter, but I don't know.
I don't know. It doesn't seem that way. So I've seen some things in terms of how they're like behind the scenes breaking it down in terms of like sharing what categories I guess it would be nominated if it were like Emmy worthy.
Yeah.
And it's saying like an hour show. Now, an hour show could be 40 minutes.
Right.
You know, but like it's so I think it's going to be just as long as the other shows have been.
Yeah.
Honestly, I think that's how long it's going to be.
I mean, and just from what we've seen in the trailer, the scope of this show seems huge.
Yes, it really does.
They may need the runtime just to pack everything in. I'm already like, we have so much to do in this show just from what I've seen in the trailer. There's at least like three different personal storylines it looks like we're going to be closely following. Yep. And then we're going to get, you know, villain stuff too. So, yeah, it's going to be a lot to work in, but they've got 12 episodes to do it. So
I'm glad you said the three separate storylines, because even though this is called Andor, I feel like an alternate title to the show could be Rebellion.
Yeah.
Right?
Absolutely.
I've seen a lot of talk online from people who are like, no one's asked for a Cassian Andor show. Nobody wants this, blah, blah, blah.
Well, and I did, so
I know.
I would have been gunning for an Andor show from the moment I saw Rogue One.
It's like you don't... I don't know if you understand that the fact that it's an Andor show is really meaning that it's a Rebellion show. Like, this is the origins of the Rebel Alliance. And, like, yeah, we got to see, like, the fun, very Star Wars version of it in Star Wars Rebels. Mm-hmm. But what's going on in the seedier places of the galaxy where the Rebellion is fomenting, as we'll talk about later when we do this trailer talk. But, I'm really excited about this show, because it's like, from what we can tell, this is like Star Wars for adults. Now, I think, and when I say that, I think everyone could still watch this, but I think it's like the audience is going to tend and skew older than it is younger.
Yeah. I mean, it's just like, you know, with some of the animated shows, the target audience has been younger, but then, you know, it's super enjoyable and there's stuff there for people of all ages. You know, we watch the animated shows and love them, and you know, so I think this is kind of going to be it going the opposite direction. You know, I think kids will still love watching Andor, and I think there won't be anything, you know, graphic or anything like that wouldn't be appropriate for them that way, but I do think it's going to be geared towards an older audience in that probably the subject matter might be a little more real, if that makes sense. Yeah. I think we're going to be dealing with a lot of personal stories, and instead of, you know, lasers against lightsabers and stuff like that, we're going to be diving into just what people do in the face of you know, struggle and conflict and different approaches to handling that, and the different characters' motivations for getting in this fight. And so, you know, I imagine it's going to be a little bit slower paced in parts of it, just from what I've seen from the trailer and everything.
But I like that.
I do too. I do too. I love that. So particularly, I think I'm most excited for Mon Mothma's stuff.
Yes.
If we're just kind of getting into it.
Oh my gosh. Because
it looks like it's going to be like Game of Thrones style political intrigue.
Which is what we've been wanting, you and me specifically.
Yes. People like made a big stink about how the prequels were too about politics and things like that. And I'm like, no. I want that, but I just want it done in you know, maybe a different way sometimes. And I think we're getting there.
Yeah, I think so too. That's so exciting to me. Is the way I've been describing this to my friends and coworkers is that this is like Star Wars if HBO made it.
That's what now, it feels like. Yeah.
Right. So like without, you know, the gratuitous violence and, you know, sexual stuff that HBO tends to have in their shows, but like it just has that look about it of like they're approaching this very differently than the way they approached The Mandalorian,
Absolutely.
The Book of Boba Fett, and definitely Obi-Wan Kenobi. There's just something different about it, and honestly I think a lot of it has to do with the showrunner Tony Gilroy, who really was the one that was brought in to rework Rogue One when some things were not working for the first cut of Rogue One. He came in and really did like the last third of the movie and redid that.
I think it maybe may have been even more. I kind of think Tony Gilroy is the director of Rogue One, but Gareth Edwards was a good team player and, you know, was along for the ride and everything, so got to kind of stay on there. It wasn't a Lord and Miller situation with Solo.
Gareth Edwards needs to come back and direct some season two episodes of Andor for sure.
I would love that. I would love that.
That would be cool.
Yeah, get his hands back kind of on the property.
Yeah. So, since we're there already, before we jump into the trailer, this is something we haven't really discussed on the podcast either, is the fact that season one will cover the first year of like Cassian joining the rebellion and really dive deep into that. And then season two, what I love, love, love they're doing is like they're structuring like every three episodes will cover 1 year leading all the way up to Rogue One.
Yes.
Brilliant. I love that.
I love it. We're going to get a nice foundation to start from this season. We're going to really get into the characters and finding out what makes them tick and everything like that. And then I think season two, after the rebellion has kind of formed, I think the rebellion becomes the main character. And we're just following where it is at, you know, year to year. Yeah. And that's an exciting prospect for me. Because, I mean, the rebellion versus the empire, I think, is my favorite conflict in Star Wars. That's the stuff I tend to gravitate towards over a lot of the Jedi stuff and everything, right? Because it's such an important moral story, and it's important to it's something that gives me a lot of hope when I look at like the real world and that kind of thing. I'm excited.
It's the most real.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Like it's the least fantasy aspect of Star Wars, and it's the most real to our world that it can be.
Yeah.
I feel like. I'm super excited for it. And you know, like this show, just the gut feeling that I have, I don't know if we'll have as much speculation as we normally do with this show, but I think we'll have more to talk about in terms of themes and like deeper things. You know what I'm saying? The fun little Easter eggs and stuff are so fun. Like, don't get me wrong. And that's part of the fun of doing this podcast. But I think this show is going to be a little bit deeper than just looking for Easter eggs. I think there'll be some, but not as much as like the other shows have. We're not like every episode of like, is Darth Vader going to show up? Is Ahsoka as Fulcrum going to show up? That's not this kind of show, and that's not what it's trying to do.
Yeah, it seems a lot more grounded, a lot more focused. Even though we are talking about, there seems to kind of be like three different main storylines going on. I do think it's going to be kind of laser tight, focused on these characters, this conflict in this period of time, not worrying about. I wouldn't expect to see, you know, like we've seen in Mandalorian season two and things like that, where characters that were previously only from like novels or from animated shows coming into live action. I don't think we're going to get much of that kind of thing going on.
No.
I think it's pretty much, you know, we're going to start with the chess pieces on the board and just watch those move, you know.
Yeah, it really feels like Tony Gilroy is like, let's do like a Jason Bourne type thing in the Star Wars universe.
Yeah.
And maybe that's even too much, like Jason Bourne, you know what I mean? Like, I would say maybe the first Jason Bourne movie, like that feeling, put it in Star Wars, that's what we're getting. It's not a big space opera epic. This is more of a space spy thriller. You know,
yeah.
And so that's important
to know
going into
this. It's like the difference between your typical Superman comic storyline and your typical Batman's comic storyline, you know?
Yeah.
Superman is dealing with threats that are cosmic in scale and, you know, he's saving the entire world at one time. Batman might be dealing with one particular case, you know?
Right.
And I think that's going to be kind of more along the lines of what we're dealing with. Obviously, the conflict is galactic in scale. You know, it's the whole rebellion versus the whole empire and everything like that, but it's not going to be, you know, we're not going to have chosen one prophecies and definitively evil characters. I'm really excited to see what they do with the villains in this show and see if we
I don't know if they'll be so bad, all of them.
Right. Surely some people on the Empire side we're going to be empathetic towards. Like, Lost Stars is a example that I'm thinking of. One of the main characters is in the Empire, but you know all of her motivations for being there. And it's that much more interesting because you get to watch this well-intending person work against this just evil machine and try to change it and, you know, ultimately kind of realize she can't.
Right.
So, yeah, those kind of stories I'm excited for.
Me too. So, okay, I think we should just jump into the trailer. We're going to go through it very quickly, just scene by scene, things that stood out to us, what we're excited for, and, of course, some speculation that might err on irresponsibility. So we'll see. All right. So when this trailer first begins, the first thing that really strikes me, Mac, is just the location of it, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there's this huge sweeping mountain. And I feel like shooting on location really changes everything.
Getting out of the volume. I think the volume has revolutionized storytelling. And if people don't know, the volume is kind of like the AR wall room that they've got, that they've shot a lot of The Mandalorian on. I would imagine they did a lot of Kenobi on it as well. But I think for Andor, we've gotten, you know, reports that we're using massive, you know, real world set pieces and stuff. Mm-hmm. And that's shown through the trailer. I can feel that, you know,
it does feel different, right?
Like, yeah,
I do get that some people were a little disappointed with Obi-Wan Kenobi. And I think this pinpoints why. This just feels different than even Obi-Wan Kenobi did. Like, Obi-Wan Kenobi kind of maybe should have felt like this a little bit in terms of the scale of it. And the scale's so large.
Yeah.
Tony Gilroy made an interesting comment in one of the articles that came out, and he said, you either have to be a full volume show or a full location shooting show. I don't know if I agree with that. I think there is a happy medium somewhere.
I think so, too, particularly when we're talking about a property that has literally alien environments and stuff.
Yeah.
Like, things are going to look weird sometimes, and that's okay.
Right.
Yeah, it would be stranger if everything was super seamless from scene to scene, because then it's just like, oh, we're not getting any fantastic locations and settings.
Exactly. But I don't know, something about this first shot just really, like, almost felt like Lord of the Rings type stuff.
This.
It was really interesting. I don't know if you noticed this, Mac, but, like, there was, like, water when they're walking the mountains that were, like, running through the mountains in the background. And if you look back in the first trailer, there was some like, these imperial-looking structures and water. So I'm thinking this is the same exact planet. We also see later in this trailer some, like, very, like, Mission Impossible type rappelling down a dam. I think that's the same planet as well. And so there's this guy walking. And my question, Mac, to you, is that Cassian walking with someone, or is that perhaps Cassian's father?
It's a great question. You know, I almost kind of think it's Cassie. I'm not sure.
It's hard to tell. I mean,
I'm also not looking
really
at it at the moment. So,
I'm going to say that I think it's his father, and I'm going to tell you why as we go throughout this. But I don't think that's Cassian, but I think it's his dad.
Okay.
I could be totally off. It looks like Cassian, though.
Right.
I mean, when he turns really quickly. So I don't know. We'll see. But then we get a shot of, like, this village, and there's this guy with just straight up an AK-47 that he's holding. That was kind of some controversy a little bit. I don't really care. That doesn't bother me because most Star Wars guns are based on real World War II guns anyway.
Right. I like the tradition of it. It's making it feel like Star Wars. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe they could have spruced it up just a little bit, but
a little more.
I don't care. And then on that, I'm going to put quotation marks around it. It's a more primitive planet, and a girl looks up and the Star Destroyer flies over very slowly. I think this is Cassian's home planet.
I would think so. What we know of Cassian is he was a separatist, kind of from an early age. He's been in this fight since he was 6 years
old. 6 years old.
So, I mean, this location looks like conflict is about to come to it, you know?
Yeah. And
I'm wondering if there's some timeline funniness going
on. Yeah, I think you might be right about that. If you remember from the very first trailer, there was like the same people were looking up at something. I don't know if it were actually the Star Destroyer, but there was like another ship that looked like it was crashing.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if like this has anything to do with this. And we know that from interviews with Tony Gilroy and stuff, really this story takes place in three major locations. Cassian's homeworld, which I think this is his homeworld. I think it's called Fest, if I remember correctly. Then that, of course, Coruscant. And then the other world that we see Cassian on that looks kind of like a junk planet a little bit, where we see most of the trailer take place.
Yeah.
And I believe that place is called Aldani. So I think this is his home world though. And remember like in one of the very first things we learned about Andor, it was that his original home world was destroyed, making him a refugee. So I'm wondering if this is the beginning of that.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's some timeline funniness going on. We're going to see some flashbacks to Cassian's earlier, you know, younger life. I almost wonder if it might be more set in the past than we think. They've been holding Diego Luna back from all the teaser and the trailer. We haven't honestly seen tons of him in those. So I wonder if maybe young Cassian is going to be featured more prominently than we think.
Yeah, there's a good chance. I mean, it's called Andor, and you know, like I feel like you could cover a lot of his life and get a lot of good story in there, even when he's younger. I mean, because that line that he does say in Rogue One is interesting.
Yeah,
you know that he has been in the fight since he was 6 years old. So I definitely think that's a real possibility. One of the things I really like about this trailer, Mac, is that the music really builds a certain kind of dread.
Mm-hmm.
And the composer for the Andor series is Nicholas Bertel, and he is the composer for Succession, which I think is like, that is a very good, like,
yeah,
for this type of show, like that's the kind of music you want.
For shows that are going to be a lot of people in rooms talking to each other,
mm-hmm.
you want that kind of thing.
Feel.
I mean,
yeah,
it's felt just in the trailer. It feels very Star Warsy, but it definitely feels different than what we're accustomed to. Even
not as operatic.
Yeah, yeah, it's a little more. It's almost like more
sneaking.
Industrial sounding in a way, but it's kind of.
There's almost like, okay, so like if you close your eyes and listen to it, it's like almost like you can imagine someone sneaking around. Dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, Pink Panther dun. Style.
Yeah. 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 I just pictured Cassian Andor like doing that, like on his tiptoes.
Andor.
So then we presumably get a shot of young Cassian staring down into a terraced gaping hole, and like a terraced, like where they've, it looks like they're mining. I don't know what's going on there, but I would assume just based on Diego Luna's age, I know he's probably playing the character a little bit younger than what he actually is, but I would have to imagine when he says that he's been in this fight since he's 6 years old, he's not just been fighting the Empire, he's been fighting the Republic. And I would imagine that the Republic has been doing this, not the Empire necessarily. And I think we've got evidence from this trailer. Later we see a shot of clone troopers walking. So I think this is the Republic doing this.
Yeah, and I mean, that'll be interesting. We've gotten some stories where it showed kind of the dark side of the Republic and that kind of thing, but really in the prequels, it's like Republic good, separatists bad, but then Republic becomes Empire, also bad, you know, right. But Republic was good.
Right.
But that can't be the case because there was a civil war.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing is like, you don't become an empire overnight.
No.
Like, there's red flags along the way of like, oh,
right.
You know, and what I hate that George Lucas cut from Revenge of the Sith, I don't know if you've seen these scenes, but there's like these scenes with senators like with Padme talking about like, I don't know if we're on the right side anymore. And they're just Mon Mothma's in that scene. They're all talking. There's some evidence of it still in the movie because she mentions it to Anakin and he says, you're starting to sound like a separatist and so on. But I love that idea of like, even the most Republic people are like, yeah, I don't know if we're the good guys actually.
Right. And I mean, the Clone Wars, you get some, like, I'm thinking particularly of the Zillow Beasts episode. There's evidence in the Clone Wars, too, that, like, they're doing some stuff that's not morally right in the name of, you know, this grand conquest or, you know, whatever. So I'm interested to see the dark side of the Republic, maybe, and see why Cassian got into that fight at such an early age.
The Zillow Beast arc is actually low-key kind of good.
It
seems like it would be stupid, but it's actually pretty good.
No,
it's
pretty good.
Then we hear Cassian say, to steal from the Empire, you just walk in like you belong. And then we see young Cassian climbing in what I believe to be the crashed ship from the very first trailer. I think this is a crashed ship because when he actually walks in, like some of the screens are flickering a little bit. I don't think he would just be able to walk in like he belongs when he's wearing what he is. You know what I'm saying?
Right. First rule of Star Wars is you gotta, if you're trying to get in somewhere, just steal a uniform. That's all you gotta do. And then you can get in wherever. But he has not done that. He hasn't lured some stormtroopers into the ship to take their armor or anything.
He has not. So then we get a shot of the Imperial Senate, Mac. And what I love is like at the very bottom of the center dais, you see the insignia of the Empire right there. Yeah. They've added that. And I'm like you said, one of the things that I'm most excited about for this show is to see the politics of the Imperial Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And they were still kind of a thorn in the Emperor's side, even up to A New Hope.
Right.
Right. Like the reason he dissolves it is because they were actually a problem for him.
Right. And so like I'm thinking of Bail Organa.
Yeah.
You know, people like that who are still trying to do some good, you know, from within. I'm interested to see what power they do actually have, you know. Mm. I would imagine they're pretty much for show. You know, and
it's,
so
it's
watching
face
people,
value, yeah.
Yeah. Watching these heroes like struggle through that and struggle with the fact that they're like, you know, maybe we need to do something else to do the most good, and that, you know, being the rebellion.
Yep.
I'm excited to see that take place and see why, you know, Bail and Mon Mothma go from respected politicians to rebels.
That's exciting. That's really exciting because like it's when we see all these like different shots on Coruscant and these like nice elaborate parties, people in gowns and stuff, and really like even Cassian's line here, he says they're so proud of themselves, so fat and satisfied. This idea of like they've already won. They've got nothing to really like fight for anymore. Like the Empire, you know what I'm saying? Like the rich get richer, the poor are getting poorer type scenario is happening here. And, you know, people are starting to see that.
Yeah.
At least some people are. Some people don't even see it anymore. And we'll talk about one of the lines that Luthen Rael says in the trailer. But like, I really am excited for that whole aspect of it. I'm wondering, like, so you say Bail Organa. I wonder if again we'll see Tarkin, you know, like if they do that the face thing again.
Yeah, I would
that
love
would be
that.
Cool.
I mean, he's a big figure at this time. He's one of the, you know, the most important Imperial officials. Like, I mean, he's pretty much the second most powerful person that people are aware of, right?
Yeah,
like Vader. I, is like kind of a secret, but
yeah, he's like the vice president of the Empire, basically.
Right. It's the Emperor, and then the next most powerful person in the galaxy is Tarkin. So,
yep, I would agree with that. So, okay, we're talking Imperials. We actually get some shots of Imperials and a lot of ISB Imperials. Yes. Which, Mac, can you explain what ISB is?
Yeah, they're the Imperial Security Bureau. They are the CIA of the Empire, essentially. They're so bad that the rest of the Empire thinks they're evil. So they're, you know, things like torture and interrogation and those kind of things are their specialty. So, but it would make sense that they're going to be featured heavily because it's that counter-espionage type thing.
Yeah.
That we're dealing with spies, you know, and they're going to be the ones hunting those spies. So, I'm excited to see how that goes and see if, you know, I'm excited to see the rest of the Imperials working alongside them and see what that dynamic's like.
I am too. That is, again, like just the whole how the politics of the Empire works. I'm excited to see all of that because I think it's going to be really, really cool. We mentioned Tarkin. I'm still wondering too if we might even get a little bit of Krennic as well, because you know,
Ben Mendelsohn, you know, yeah, he could be around.
The girl that we see, she's dressed just like him, you know, like she, of course, she is ISB, but I don't know. It'd just be really, really cool to see him again as well. So we see some of the Imperials, they're drinking, they're smiling a little bit. And then we cut to a young Cassian walking into the ship. And then we overhear Cassian say, "They can't imagine someone like me would ever get inside their house." And then we get a shot of older Cassian, what looks to be the garb of the planet police, basically, which, you know, this is something that I feel like Nazis did in World War II, where they would like co-op people into police yourself. We're in charge, but you guys come up with your own, you know, police force and we'll support you type thing. Right.
Yeah. I mean, there's historical precedent for that for sure. Yeah. And we all know the Empire is just space Nazis.
Exactly. So, okay. Do you think Cassian was actually a part of it at one point? Or do you think he's like he's inside to do the Star Wars thing to get to another place?
Yeah. I could see it going either way. It could just be, I mean, it seems to me like by the time we see him in Rogue One, that's really kind of all he's done in his life is being a spy, being a rebel. But I could see, you know, a interesting arc to be had where he struggles with, like, am I really doing the right thing by being part of this, you know, like, planetary police force? Or is there another way I could do some good? And then getting back into the rebellion thing. I don't know. I could see it going either way. I tend to think he's just kind of sneaking in somewhere, though.
I do too, and the reason why is we see a bearded Cassian a lot, and then we see a freshly shaved Cassian. I think he had to shave to get into the planetary police force. Yeah. And then in the first trailer, we see Kyle Soller's character looking at a hologram of Cassian, and he's a part of the planetary police as well. His name's Cyril Karn. I think he's going to be like his nemesis throughout season one, like the one person that's like kind of on to him and hunting him like at a local level, and maybe he's looking to join the Empire or like get favor with the Empire in some way. So I think you're right. I think he's just kind of sneaking in, and Cyril Karn gets wind of that. So that's kind of my speculation there. And then we get a scene of Stellan Skarsgård character. His name's Luthien Rial. Seemingly recruiting Cassian to the rebellion.
Yeah. Or at least for a job that's counter Empire or something.
So his character is probably the most intriguing to me from what we've seen.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
I can't figure him out.
He's featured the most in this trailer. I feel like he gets, of the characters we know, he's the one that gets the most screen time in this trailer.
And if, you know, if we're going by tropes of like spy things, I don't know if we can completely trust him, even if he's recruiting for the rebellion.
Yeah.
He could be like a counter agent type thing where it's like, we learn by the end of the series, like, he's not a good guy and he was going to turn in names to the Empire. You know what I mean? Like, he's playing both sides. Who knows?
Who knows?
All I'm saying is I don't know if I completely trust him just based on this trailer, even though they're kind of portraying him as a rebellion leader.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
I think so. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah. Then we get a quick shot of clone troopers marching in the street. This is a very quick shot. So if you're watching along or you go back and watch, we get a very, very quick shot of clone troopers marching in the street. And I think the man that was holding the AK-47 is watching next to another person, which makes me think, okay, this is back to that very first planet. And that would kind of go along with what we were saying. It was the Republic, not the Empire. Or at least the very first year of the Empire before they transitioned into stormtroopers like we saw in the Bad Batch season one.
Yep.
So I don't know, that was pretty cool. And then we overhear Luthen say, "The Empire is choking us so slowly, we are starting not to notice." That's a great line.
I think, yeah, it is. It really is. 'Cause that's how it happens. You know, it's like the, crabs boiling in water thing. You know, if it's room temperature when they get in, they don't notice as the water starts boiling. And I think that's really the only way that any kind of like systematic oppression can happen, you know.
It's not like overnight,
right? At least it's the only way for it to happen over any extended period of time. People right. have to just like, get desensitized to it.
Exactly. And then we get a lot of quick shots of different things, a lot of running, a lot of stuff going on. And then we hear, "What I'm asking is this, wouldn't you rather give it all to something real?" And then we get a shot of Luthen walking off his ship. It looks really cool. His ship is awesome. It looks Corellian.
Yeah. Yeah. It has those same kind of turrets, you know, thrusters kind of look the same.
Little Outrider Dash Rendar-ish.
Little bit. I don't mind that though. I'm into it. I'm here for it.
Yeah, kind of a 90s Star Wars vibe to that ship that I'm really digging.
He needs some more pouches and shoulder pads added to his costumes though.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, he's definitely going to go recruit Dash Rendar. No doubt.
How many years is it before we get Dash Rendar in a TV show?
Four.
Over, yeah, okay, sure.
Four. I don't know.
I'll take it.
That's just the number that came to me. Then we hear Luthen say, "I need all the heroes I can get." So it seems like he is building, like, maybe he's wanting to start a rebel cell on Aldani, which, you know, it seems like he's on with Cassian Andor.
Yeah.
At least that's what the impression we get at first. And then we get a cool shot of two tubes. From Rogue One.
Yeah.
He is good to see. And then black and white X-Wing, and that's the colors of the Partisans. That's a different Rebel cell. Remember, the Rebel Alliance is not one unified thing. It's called an alliance because it's all these different cells, which the Rebels from Star Wars Rebels would be its own Rebel cell.
Yeah.
So that's really cool to see. And then we hear Saw Gerrera say, "For the greater good." And we actually get a scene between them, and it's really cool to have Forrest Whitaker in this show.
Yeah.
And Luthen says, yeah,
he's getting
go ahead.
To play it a little less wheezy.
He's
not talking like this.
Lies! Deception!
Are you here to kill me?
Borgullet! So Luthen says, "Call it what you will," and then Saw says, "Let's call it war," which is, you know, Saw Gerrera, he basically is exiled from the Rebel Alliance, and you can actually see this happen in Star Wars Rebels because he is so extreme. Like, he is on the other side. He is basically playing by the Empire's rules, and not everyone's comfortable with that.
Yeah. I mean, he's a super important character, I think, in kind of defining, like, the soul of the rebellion. Mm. Because he's got the right intentions and everything, but his character shows us how the rebellion has to be different than the Empire if they're gonna win. Like, if right. they're gonna keep hope alive, if they're gonna inspire people, and then eventually be able to govern people, you know, they have to be different.
Yeah.
And so the conflicts with Saw and his, you know, arguing over the means and everything of rebellion, I think are really important conversations just to get a overall picture of where the rebellion's at this time.
Yeah, and I mean, Saw Gerrera is such an interesting character, right? Like, the guy has literally been fighting
since he was
forever.
6 years old.
I mean, like, he goes from fighting the Separatists. He's trained by Anakin Skywalker and yeah. Captain Rex. And then when, you know, they beat the Separatists, all of a sudden he's now having to fight the Empire. Like, immediately, we see that in the Bad Batch.
Yeah.
Like, the guy just has never stopped fighting. And that does something to you, I think. Like, endless war is going to change you. And then we get my favorite line from this trailer from one of the planetary policemen, a guy named Lieutenant Mosk. He says, "There's fomenting out there, sir. Pockets of fomenting." It's my favorite line.
It's a wild choice to include in a trailer, I felt like.
It was perfect.
I'm like,
though.
Story-wise, I'm sure it's amazing. It's just you don't often hear people talking like that in marketing materials, I guess. No.
Pockets of fomenting. That sounds like a band name.
Pockets of fomenting. I thought he was saying fermenting at first. I was like, are we brewing something? Like, what's going on?
We gotta stop that from happening.
I'm like,
yeah.
Stop just, exposing all your grain to air and stuff. I don't know.
Just amazing.
Get the yeast
amazing
out of there.
Dialogue.
What are you doing?
Get that yeast out of there. Then we get some quick shots of Battlestar Galactica workers, an Imperial shuttle landing. We get Coruscant again, and then the character that I was referring to earlier that's dressed a lot like Krennic in the ISB gear, is her name is Deidre Miro, and she says, "You're in my net. Are you a fish or a thief?" So it kind of implies like the Empire is just kind of taking people in. Not really knowing, are you even guilty of what you're doing? You know what I'm saying? Like, they're just they'll figure that out afterwards.
Right. Guilty until proven innocent.
Basically.
Got you going 55 and a 54. So
yeah. And this girl seems, I don't have her character name off the top of my head, but the girl that she's captured seemed really interesting. She seems really close to Cassian in some way. I don't know if she's a sister or potentially wife, girlfriend type. I don't know what that relationship is, but yeah. I'll be interested to see that. But she does seem kind of close to Cassian just based off the way the trailer is presented. And then we get several shots of Luthien and his double life. And this is the part where I'm like, okay, maybe I don't know if we can trust him. Like, he seems like he's maybe putting on the front of this rich businessman. We've seen some pictures of he's got a collection a lot like the villain from Solo. What's his name? Drayden Voss.
Drayden Voss. It's always weird because it's so close to Quinlan Voss.
Yeah. but a lot like his luxury, just all these pieces there. Honestly, it looks like there might be some Mandalorian armor back there, some ancient Mandalorian armor, and stuff. And he's putting on this ring. He has longer hair. I don't know if that's a wig or not, or if this is, again, we're playing with the timeline a little bit here. But he's meeting Mon Mothma. And so it's I don't know if he's playing both sides or he's trying to get Mon Mothma into the rebellion. He is the contact point for her.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I just don't think Luthien's going to make it out of the show. I don't know if he might make it out of season one. I don't know if he's making it out of the series.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know.
It's interesting.
I don't know enough right now. I need to see this. I need to see it now.
Exactly. And then we get some shots of Imperial Coruscant, and I really love it. Looks exactly like Coruscant should, but it's like less colorful. Like, it's very drab and like very like, I don't know, like Berlin 1944.
Just looking. Like very oppressed.
Yeah. All gray concrete.
Yeah.
You know,
and if that's a whole planet like that, it's bad news. it's a real bummer.
Yeah. I mean, like, Coruscant in the prequels has this like almost golden like aesthetic, right?
Yeah.
All that's gone.
Oh yeah. It's like, yeah, I mean, it's kind of like what happened to a lot of these beautiful ornate cities. Like, I'm thinking specifically in like Italy, when Mussolini took over, they just built all of the ugliest buildings, and they're like right next to the most classic architecture in history, you know?
I feel like we might need to read some history before watching this show.
Yeah. Crazy. Brush up on real world history so we can talk more about a completely fictional universe.
But I'm into that. Then now that I'm thinking about it, this might be my favorite line, or it's at least my second favorite line from the trailer. Mon Mothma says to someone a lot of people thought was former Chancellor Valorum from episode one. It is not him.
No.
Unfortunately, because I thought that would be really cool if Valorum was part of the rebellion. Like,
yeah.
That would be like really, really cool.
I mean, he got like put out to pasture by
immediately. Immediately. Mon Mothma says, as long as everyone thinks I'm an irritation, they'll miss what I'm really doing.
I love that. She's who I'm most excited to see operating in this show. Just seeing what she does. I've loved reading about her and the way she does things in books like Bloodline. Very kind of politically focused book. I don't know. I'm very excited to see that play out on screen. And I don't know. I enjoy her dialogue and stuff, the way she talks. And I think she's maybe the character I'm most interested in seeing more of.
Absolutely. I can't wait. Then there's a ton of quick shots. Some of the spy stuff that I talked about, like where they're rappelling down the wall off of Dam. And again, I think that's the first planet. So it makes me think we're going to see some separatist stuff potentially. Maybe Cassian goes back to his home planet to do some things to help free some people, because in the first trailer we see like all these people in white with no shoes on walking through a very THX looking
it was kind of bizarre.
So I don't know if maybe Cassian goes back to free his people from his home planet or something. I could totally see that happening. We also get alien scientist guy, which a lot of people thought was Maz Kanata.
Just because of the goggles and the orange skin. I get that, but it's not.
I saw some speculation where like this could still be a human that has like changed himself so much to like do surgery and stuff.
Didn't he have like arms. Four arms? Yeah. Okay. Like a Doc Ock situation.
Yeah, but I mean, he is kind of orange looking.
Yeah.
I think he's an alien, which I don't think we're going to get a lot of aliens in this show. So like take your aliens where you can get them with Andor. So
I agree. It's not like we're going to have alien Twi'leks and Rodians just running around willy-nilly.
I don't think so. Cassian says he's tired of losing. We get the line of this is how revolution begins. And then we get some really cool shots of some space stuff. Again, I think it might be going back to that spaceship crashing. And then some clever editing with the TIE fighter being chased, which I think we see in the first trailer, Cassian jumping into that TIE fighter, maybe to escape.
Yeah.
But the CGI looks a lot better, in my opinion, than most of the Star Wars television stuff that we've seen.
Yeah, and I wonder if that's just because they are using real sets and stuff. They've got more resources to spin where they really need it, you know, because they're using practicals for most everything else.
So that's pretty much the end of the trailer. And just to kind of riff off that point, if this is very successful and a lot of people say they love the look of this, I feel like we're going to transition to a good, happy hybrid of the volume and real shooting locations, because I think that's what we need.
I think it's honestly what we need too. The volume is kind of the shiny new toy that they're really putting through its paces, you know, since it's new, and they're really showing it off, seeing what it can do. But there's just something about practical sets really building spaces. I mean, I think you'll see it in the performances. It's easier to act when you know against things that are really there instead of the AR stuff. Just look at the prequels and how hard of a job it was to act just on like completely blue screens, basically, you know. A happy medium I think would be ideal.
A good example of that, I mean, we just recently had it, so I guess this does kind of prove Tony Gilroy wrong, is the Batman. That used the volume as well.
Yeah.
But also used real world location. Like, it used both.
Right.
And it felt pretty seamless to me.
Yeah.
Like, they used it in appropriate areas, not all the time.
Right. Yeah. No, I think more of that will, we're going to see CGI get better because you're not just always doing CGI and that kind of thing, you know? All those digital environments have to be created ahead of time to shoot on, you know? So, I mean, you're using a lot of your CGI budget before you even get actors on set. And, I don't know. I think it's going to be a net positive if they do a kind of a hybrid thing.
Yeah. You said do. Yeah,
I did. I did.
All right. Well, this has been fun. It's been nice jumping back talking Star Wars with you, Mac.
Yeah, I felt like I was a little rusty, but it's good. We're knocking the rust off, and we'll be ready to go by the time Andor comes. I can't wait to cover each and every episode of it.
Absolutely.
And we'll be back with more voicemails and all that. We're kind of working on finalizing our schedule for our Andor coverage, so expect to hear more about that in the near future, probably.
Okay, so there's 12 episodes. We're not going to be able to, like, if we want to be sane and also still, like, be able to do this very well, we're gonna have to adjust some things for Andor at least.
Yeah,
that doesn't mean like forever it's gonna be like that, but like for Andor we've got to adjust it slightly just because it's so massive, there's so much of it for so long. So
you definitely can still expect to, you know, we'll be doing some voicemail content.
Oh, for sure.
All of the things you know and love from this show will still be there. Just might be different intervals and things like that. We'll see.
Now,
we'll see.
I will say, like, with Andor, there might be less speculation, but more theme talk. Like, talking about the themes and stuff that are presented in Andor just because of the nature of what the show is.
Right.
So we've got to kind of shape our show to complement Andor better. And then we'll be way back to irresponsible speculation for The Mandalorian.
Oh, yes.
I mean, that's what we're built on. But
absolutely. Yeah. And that shows made for it, because
it really is.
Season 3 is gonna be nuts.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. You can be on the lookout for more Andor content as we get closer again, as major things happen, but we wanted to at least get this episode out there before September 21st, and then of course we'll begin our week-to-week coverage of Andor starting then. So make sure you're subscribed on both our podcast and YouTube. And you can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at COTWatch to engage with us there. And you can support us by joining our Patreon for just $2 a month to get access to bonus material and our Discord at patreon.com/TheMandalorianWatch. I love you guys.
Yeah, so good to be back. We'll be back again soon. Don't know exactly when yet, but soon.
No.
But until
no
then, yeah, we're going to be very light on commitment at for the next little bit. But anyway, with all that said, we'll see you again soon. But until then, keep the watch.